Click kaya959.co.za
to download the Kaya Biz podcast.
Tonight, we're going to talk about how Celci is gaining momentum as they plan to list on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange in 2026. Now, you don't just list overnight. A lot needs to take place, and you also need to get the buy-in of members of the investment community. Tonight, we take a look at their prospectus and, most importantly, where the business is in terms of the pre-listing requirements. Dobek Pater, telecoms analyst, will join us to help us unpack, I guess, the prospects of Celci return. I always say returning, but the truth is it never made its debut on the market. So this is an IPO, an initial public offering, their debut on the JSE. Dobek, always a pleasure speaking to you. I'm excited to deep dive into these dynamics with you regarding Celci. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Good evening, and to all the listeners as well.
Fantastic. Dobek, I think before we even talk about Celci's plans gaining momentum for them to list on the JSE, it is only fair for us just to reflect on their journey since inception here in South Africa. It's a brand that many of us are very familiar with. We've actually grown very, for many of us, it holds strong memories around experiences, around costing, around even the ad campaign that they had at one point. But in terms of profits, unfortunately, they're still trying to make their way into the black. Give us your analysis and perspective around Celci and the context of its operations in a market like South Africa.
Yeah, as you indicated, they've been around for over two decades, since 2001. Unfortunately, most of the time they've been battered in the market. I think they've been struggling to make headway and survive. And they were doing better at one point, but I think particularly during the reign of Alan Knott Craig Sr., who was the previous CEO of Vodacom Group, yes. Then moved on to Celci later on in his career. And the numbers look quite good. And they were reporting over 20 million subscribers, but those numbers were, in a sense, inflated. Mainly for marketing reasons, they were not annuity subscribers, effectively subscribers that can be counted on to keep buying your product, airtime or data, month in, month out. Celci came into the market a few years behind, in fact, several years behind Vodacom and MTN, which launched in 93, 94. By then, those operators were fairly well settled, particularly once prepaid products were introduced. The market really started growing. And unfortunately, they, like big corporations, they were protective of their position in the market. When Celci was launched, they increased between themselves, or effectively interconnect rates, the rate that an operator pays the other operator when their call goes to another network, to that other operator's network. What that did is, because Celci was very small with very few subscribers, and those subscribers most of the time called either MTN or Vodacom number, because those networks had far greater customer numbers, that hurt Celci financially quite significantly, because it just kept paying money over to MTN and Vodacom and received very little in return. That was eventually that was regulated by ICASA, the market regulator, but it did some damage to Celci. But I think an even more important element of Celci lack of success was the strategy they staked out for themselves initially, and that was to target the low end of the market, i.e. youth predominantly and lower income individuals.
Yes.
That part of the market that wasn't really addressed by Vodacom and MTN, because they didn't feel obliged to do so, because they still had plenty of green shoots in the sort of mid-market to higher market segments. Celci wanted to go after those lower market segment individuals, banking on the or hypothesizing maybe that as these individuals, particularly the youth, grows and becomes adults and professionals, well-to-do individuals, they will continue with the Celci brand. That didn't prove to be true, unfortunately, for Celci. So, yes, youth and lower-income segments of the market were using Celci quite extensively, because Celci also came out with a price almost with a strategy to go into a price war, which is not logical if you are the smallest guy in the market. You only are the worst off ultimately, worse off than the bigger operators. But what the market and CELSI discovered was that as that youth grows and matures and becomes professionals after school, they actually are very aspirational, and they aspired to brands that represented more well-to-do individuals and businesses. And at the time, MTN was more associated with as a business individual brand, Vodacom also with the more well-to-do individuals with status. So those subscribers would then abandon CELSI and migrate to either Vodacom or MTN. So CELSI got stuck effectively with customers that were low ARPU or spent per month.
Yes.
And then subsequently lost them. So that contributed to CELSI's woes. And then, they never quite recovered from those initial factors maybe conspired against them, some of them out of their own making in the market. And then Telkom came into the market in 2010 with its own mobile offering. ATA, correct. Yeah. That was effectively the fourth operator, which initially had also slow beginnings, but over time it actually gained in momentum quite significantly. It's doing very well now as the third biggest operator, mobile operator in the market, and then just contributed further to CELSI's woes. And what Telkom also did, which CELSI didn't do initially, was Telkom fairly early on entered into what's called roaming agreements with MTN and Vodacom, i.e. they were partially using at least MTN's and Vodacom's network to service its own customers. It did cost them more in operational expenditure and OPEX, but it saved them money that they couldn't on building out their own infrastructure, physical infrastructure on towers, which is very expensive 100%. In the telecoms, in the mobile space. CELSI didn't do it. CELSI went to compete head-on with MTN and Vodacom with its own infrastructure, its radio access network, all those radios and masts and towers. And it kept spending a lot of money, not getting the return for that as MTN and Vodacom would. And it could never keep up because Vodacom and MTN had a lot more funding at their disposal. They would spend up to 10 billion rand a year on their networks. CELSI could only spend, let's say, around 2 billion a year. Sometimes when it went very aggressive, it was closer to 3 billion, but only still about a fourth of what the big guys were spending. And it just kept pumping money into its own infrastructure without really seeing the corresponding benefit. And then ultimately we had Rain come in. Rain is fairly small, but it plays in a specific, still to a large extent, in a specific market segment, not to call it a niche, which is fixed wireless access services, although it has expanded into its operations into full mobility services as well, i.e. to handsets. But it mainly has customers with routers, sort of Wi-Fi routers, boxes sitting in your house, providing you with the household with internet connectivity, which typically generate a lot more money per month than a mobile subscriber with a handset. So even though Rain is relatively small in subscriber numbers, it is a fairly formidable competitor, which just makes the market more competitive and more difficult for CELSI.
100%.
And
Dobik, you and I can talk about...
go through a couple recapitalization exercises because of that, because of growing debts and inability to service it.
Yeah, 100%. Dobik, this reminds me of the time when I first started in the industry and met yourself and a few other telco analysts, because it really was a battle of all these players trying to get into the telco space. And as you've mentioned, through all these shifts that CELSI has had to experience, at some point they even had a streaming venture called Black. At some point as well, not too heavily invested in 3G because the CEO at the time wasn't too focused on it. And then still bogged down by the very competitive space that they're in, with the big brothers being Vodacom and MTN, as you've mentioned. Despite all of that, Blue Label Telecoms came into the picture then in 2018, 2019. And I'm quite keen, just to get your assessment of there's a significant amount of debt that they've had to pay down, trying to right-size the organization, recapitalize it, and now actually preparing it for listing. Does it make sense for Celsi to be unbundled from Blue Label and listed essentially independently, in your assessment?
There is a twofold purpose to that, I think. And it certainly makes sense from, I think, Blue Label Telecom's perspective. Currently, Blue Label Telecoms, through its subsidiary, the prepaid company, owns almost 50% of Celsi. It is the biggest shareholder in the company. It is trying to buy about four more percentage points of shares in order to have effectively, in order to be in absolute control, have a controlling stake in the company in Celsi. It's awaiting regulatory approval. What Celsi's acquisition has done to Blue Label Telecom is, I think, primarily just degrade that company, because they made the acquisition in 2017, in a few years leading up to that, a lot of companies thought that mobile was still the best thing since sliced bread, and in fact, a money printing machine. There were a number of global operators also looking at the local market, trying to buy equity in companies or buy companies, smaller mobile operators. And I think Blue Label thought it's time to diversify its own revenue. Mm-hmm. It was being very successful, and mobile market looked like something they wanted to move into, since they were already selling a lot of the vouchers, and they could also guarantee, probably secure for themselves, a future purchase base. So people who are buying these vouchers that Blue Label Telecom sells, Vodacom at the time was looking at setting up its own operation, in fact, even competition to Blue Label Telecom. So it was partially, I think, driven by Blue Label Telecom's fear of maybe losing ultimately its customers who are buying the vouchers, and because they thought they would be limited to Celsi ultimately, and also expanding and generating additional revenue by participating directly in the mobile market through that acquisition. It turned out not to be quite true in terms of the vouchers, and also they happened to buy a company that they thought was a good buy at the time, maybe, and they could turn it around. It was ailing, but they could fix it. They haven't been able to for the past, what's it now, 8 years. So it's another try. And from Blue Label Telecom's perspective, I think if they list Celsi, effectively it will take part of the problem off their hands, so to speak. They will retain a minority stake. They plan to have around 26, maybe a bit more percent through the prepaid company. But the listing would also, and the sale of the shares to other shareholders would also generate cash. So the thinking goes that for Celsi, that ultimately Celsi, or that would be able to offset the losses, compensate Blue Label Telecoms for the debts that they've incurred. Gotcha. Over the years.
And Dobik, perhaps this is where you can also give us some insight, right? Because as we do take a look at what has been shared so far in a circular regarding how the pre-listing restructuring is going to take place before any participation in an investment roadshow. You've alluded to some of it briefly, being Blue Label. Then there's a company called TPC, the prepaid company, in terms of the distribution of the airtime. And then there's Celsi ListCo, which we understand at some point will be flipped to allow Celsi executives and management essentially to buy a stake in the business of just shy of 5%. In terms of the structure, and I guess what has been shared so far, a strong initiative here is also to pay down some debt obligations that exist. The metrics, when you look at them, varying numbers that have been positioned regarding the three different, I guess, ports that we're discussing, help us simplify it as well for us as South Africans, and if the structure will be well received by the investment community.
Yeah, so the 4.5% won't, as far as I understand it, won't be purchased by management. It will be provided to the management, I think, as an incentive. So they will need to earn it, so to speak, or maybe we'll get it as on credit, maybe, in order to make sure that once they have these shares, those shares appreciate rather than just stand still or depreciate. So that's a form of an incentive. But there's quite a bit of effectively what Blue Label Telecoms plans to do through its subsidiaries is to buy up some additional shares in order to have a controlling stake of Cell C, and then effectively list then Cell C on the JSC, and those shares will be sold to part of it to the public, part of it probably to certain institutional stakeholders, maybe by invitation, but effectively and then also in that process, there's a company called Comms Equipment Company, which is now which is owned by the prepaid company, TPC, which in turn is owned by Blue Label Telecom. The Comms Equipment Company effectively manages the Cell C postpaid, i.e. contract subscriber base, jointly with Vodacom. It's leveraging some Vodacom systems to help manage that postpaid subscriber base, which are the more lucrative customers. Now, Cell C, as part of this process, will be purchasing the Comms Equipment Company, i.e. it's going to be almost buying back its own postpaid subscribers and be able to control them directly again, which they did before, but it proved to be a bit costly to them. So they almost disposed of them in that manner. So the restructuring is meant to effectively place Cell C in a better position as far as its balance sheet goes and its ability to generate revenue in the future through better quality subscribers as well. And it has also disposed of some non-profitable subscribers, let them go, so to speak, in order to improve its revenue per user and its revenue generation versus its costs. So it's moving into the positive territory, as we saw by sort of the latest results announcements from Blue Label. The objective is to make it attractive so that there are willing buyers for the Cell C shares once it's being listed on the JSE. And it will also place Cell C in a position independent of Blue Label Telecoms as far as looking for more independent as far as looking for future funding is concerned. So if Cell C wants to either expand through acquisition or investment in its operations, it will be able to go and source that funding itself without having to coordinate that and obtain permission from Blue Label Telecoms.
Got you.
So from that perspective, Cell C will be able to be more in charge of its own future destiny. It will also effectively offload what's been a fairly significant burden on Blue Label Telecoms from BLT.
Got you.
We're also retaining a stake. So hopefully if Cell C grows, there'll still be a stake indirectly held by BLT that hopefully will appreciate and generate more money for them.
100%, yeah. BLT being Blue Label Telecoms, and even they've gone through a transition in terms of a renaming of their share code, Blue, and even their company on the JSE. Dobik, there's so many amazing parts, and I can't wait for a sit-down with the executives of Cell C to tell us more. But as you've said, they're getting their house in order. They're preparing quite adequately and clearly and intentionally to list. But to get the support of members of the investment community and asset management firms, and you and I as retail investors, we need to buy their story in terms of the growth and the success that they want to build. And Cell C has really put in a lot of effort in remaining competitive in the local market and providing the needs of their customers. But given that the mobile environment has shifted so much, mobile money, MTN and Vodacom have tapped into enterprise development and enterprise support, reach across the continent, there's still opportunities that they've already expanded into aggressively when it comes to data. Where would you like to see Cell C focus, or what would make a great strategy for Cell C to actually attain the level of growth that would win the hearts of investors, not just their hearts, but their pockets?
Yeah, so one of the aspects, and as you said, maybe as a preamble, the traditional mobile market has effectively become commoditized, and it's moving deeper into that space. voice, paid for voice, circuit switch voices is declining. Although people speak more and more, they just use data bearer services like WhatsApp, or even using voice over what's called VoLTE, voice over LTE. So effectively, you pay for data, but you take advantage of voice services. Yes. Data prices are also declining. There's a lot of pressure on that, mobile data prices. So you need to sell large volumes in order to generate decent returns. So, an interesting element, aspect of the South African market is that over the past few years, we've seen almost a surge in what are called mobile virtual network operators. These are service providers who act like mobile network operators, but they don't have their own network infrastructure. Well, there are various flavors. What we have in South Africa is mostly service providers without their own underlying infrastructure, without their own spectrum,
yes,
frequencies. So they need to use other operators' systems and infrastructure to provide services. Now, we've got umpteen of those MVNOs, and yes, they have been increasing, particularly large retailers and banks. And Capitec Bank is probably the best-known example now. They are the biggest with over a million subscribers within a relatively short space of time, adding about 100,000 every month new subscribers. Now, most of these MVNOs are actually using Cell C's systems. Cell C is the biggest host of MVNOs in South Africa. Mm. MTN has begun that, Vodacom as well, partially because of obligations from the market regulatory authority, ICASA, yes, after they acquired spectrum in an auction a few years ago. That was part of the deal. But Cell C is the biggest, and it generates quite a bit of money out of wholesale services to those MVNOs. Mm. So on the one hand, they do compete with the with Cell C's own retail operation, because you know, Cell C may not be able to win a retail consumer customer because an MVNO that's using the Cell C infrastructure wins that customer because they offer a better deal, for instance. But because of Cell C's relatively small market share, chances are that these MVNOs will actually be winning more customers away from the larger competitors, and Cell C will be gaining in wholesale revenue by providing those wholesale services on the back of the systems to the MVNOs.
100%.
So that's one area where Cell C can continue to grow and excel, because it's got prior experience and I think good processes in place. Now that it's using MTN's and Vodacom's network, it does offer better service, which it's been winning some accolades lately in that space as well. So, you know, that's something to consider or to look out for, probably. It can, probably it will ultimately also move in the direction that we see other mobile network operators moving in. That's financial services,
yes,
various flavors, including moving into banking services and insurance, various insurance products. They probably won't move into content, as you mentioned, Black, which was the Cell C video on demand, yes, content service. It was one of those fairly, I think, well documented failures. But I think financial services, is just because the mobile environments or mobile operators as entities lend themselves to also offering these financial services because of two facts. One is they've got a lot of subscribers on the networks as customers, and you know, as a society, we're increasingly moving to the handset as the tool to transact. It could be a virtual credit card, it could be a mobile banking app. You know, there are a plethora of apps being available. So that gives the mobile operators an advantage because they already have these people out there, their customers with these mobile devices in their hands. So they might as well start offering those financial services to them.
Exactly. Oh, Dobik, I could speak to you for days on end about the telco space, because just the examples and overview you've given us, really, you know, we've done our best to encapsulate almost two decades of history here related to Cell C and the industry trends that they've also experienced. We haven't even touched on that last mile reach when it came to data connectivity, and how Telkom also has reorganized and shifted itself to be a key player within the infrastructure space. And as you mentioned, MVNOs, mobile virtual network operators. Red Bull was one of them. Cell C has been a significant contributor to that growth. And now, earlier this morning, I remember reading that Nedbank is also making its play into the mobile space.
Yes.
So, jeesh, it's becoming competitive. Dobik, such a pleasure speaking to you, sir. I can't wait to sit down with you and hear your perspective once we reach 2026 and officially get to witness the kudu horns being blown for Cell C, as it lists.
Hopefully, yeah. Will be a kudos for the JSE.
Yeah.
They need another listing.
That's true, right? This whole ecosystem. Dobik, truly appreciate your time this evening, sir. Thank you kindly again.
Thank you very much. Have a good evening.
Likewise.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Dobik Peter is a telecoms analyst helping us unpack not only the journey that Cell C has been through over the last two decades, but how it's trying to gain momentum to make its debut on the JSE by 2026.
Kaya Biz with Gugule Tumfuphi, Monday to Thursday, 6 to 8 p.m. on Kaya 959.
Click kaya959.co.za
to download the Kaya Biz podcast.